2 weeks ago, we celebrated Easter. At Easter, we proclaimed Christ is risen, and we responded with, He is risen indeed. We learned a new song, which was saying, death is dead, love is won, Christ has conquered. And that's what we celebrate each and every Sunday, the fact that Jesus, through His resurrection, has conquered sin, death, and the devil, that we live in a new world, the beginning of a new creation. But there's a tension in the Christian life. There's something that goes on because we also realize there's grief, there's sorrow in the world. Stories like Ivy's, all the other children there at Wedgwood, stories in your own life. We've had several members of our congregation lose loved ones in the last few weeks, a father, a sister. And so there's this sense of grief. And so we wonder, what do we do with that tension? How do we deal with this thing where we want to proclaim that Christ is risen and the world is made new, but our hearts are still breaking at times? We're still struggling. We don't know what to do with that. And so today we're going to be looking at the book of Lamentations. It's this tiny little book in the Old Testament, sandwiched between two of the prophets, and not a book that many of us turn to frequently for reading. There's some disturbing parts in it there, and a little bit that you heard reading, and these things about, you know, my skin and my flesh grow old, and women eating their children, and it's a terrifying, horrifying book in parts of it. But it also helps us understand, how do we respond in times of challenge? What do we do with this? And so we're in the midst of this series called Immersed Poets, looking at some of the Old Testament poetical books. The Psalms and Lamentations falls in that. So a little bit about the book of Lamentations and what it's all about. So Lamentations, we traditionally held to be written by the prophet Jeremiah, and it was written during this time of destruction. So Jeremiah lived in the city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem was the center of Jewish life. It was the place of the temple. It was the place of commerce. It represented who the people were. And around 586 BC, 586 years before Jesus, the Babylonian Empire came and they conquered Jerusalem. And they took the people off into captivity. Now, there were people who remained behind, but they were in desperate straits. Their leaders, the wealthy, the ones who led the things had all been taken away, and there was a foreign government occupying, and there was times of famine and distress, and they were feeling these feelings, and Jeremiah is writing about these, and you can hear it in the language of Lamentations. We can see the word lament, Lamentations, this word of lament that involves expressions of deep anguish and sorrow. Lamentations certainly isn't the only one like this. If you read the book of Psalms, you'll find dozens and dozens of what we would call lament psalms, people crying out, using language like their feet being dragged down, being down in the depths, being underwater, enemies all around them. Poetical language that we can sympathize with. We can understand that feeling of, if you've ever been in a moment of grief, a moment of desperation, a moment of anguish, where it feels like there's invisible forces dragging you down and you can't take a breath. Now, the book of Lamentations is structured into, we have what we call five chapters in it. The chapters weren't originally there, but there was a structure to it where the opening parts of it used what's called an acrostic, where each of the verses or each of the lines began with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet, kind of in an order. So like the first one would begin with Aleph and then Beit, and so like ABC in our language. And so there was this structure of like this feeling of, I have this anguish, I have this sorrow, I have what's going down deep inside of me, and I need to put some structure to it. I need to wrap something around it to help me even express it. But as the poem goes on, that acrostic fades away. The feeling of when grief sometimes just overwhelms you and you don't even know, and it just kind of pours out. And so while we may not be able to identify specifically with what it's like to have a foreign government come and haul our friends and relatives off into captivity and be lost behind, we can understand the feeling. So like in 2:11 where it says, I have cried until the tears no longer come. My heart is broken. My spirit is poured out in agony as you see the desperate plight of my people. Little children and tiny babies are fainting and dying in the streets. We may not know that, but we know that feeling of, I have cried until the tears no longer come. My heart is broken. But in the middle of the poem, there is a bit of a turn. Some of the most famous poetry, and we sang at the opening of the service, that song, Great is Thy Faithfulness, which is drawn from the book of Lamentations. So the line where it says, I will never forget this awful time as I grieve over my loss, yet I will dare to hope when I remember this. The faithful love of the Lord never ends. His mercies never cease. Great is his faithfulness. His mercies begin afresh each morning. So right in the middle, in the midst of all this anguish, this sorrow, comes that line. But then you think, oh, it's great now, all is good. And then it turns back into the grief and sorrow. And even the end of the book, the very final lines, restore us, O Lord, and bring us back to you again. Give us back the joys we once had. This is the last line of the book. Or have you utterly rejected us? Are you angry with us still? Where even though there's this turn to hope in the middle, a reminder of God's mercies and his faithfulness and his grace, it ends on this note of, are you still angry, God? Is this sorrow going to continue? And so what I want to do this morning is think about this idea of lament and how this fits into our life as Christians. Now, lament is a crying out in grief and anguish, but it's crying out to God. Now, there's a specific situation here, but one of the issues is we think about, what do we do with lament? How do we handle that? Because the temptation might be to kind of write it off. And the reality is, as a church, and I'm broadly speaking, the church, particularly in the United States, often doesn't deal with lament well. We're uncomfortable with it, I think. We're uncomfortable sometimes with those expressions of feelings. One way I would suggest that is reflected is, if you ever take a moment and open your hymnal and flip through it, you don't find many hymns that are truly lament. Now, the book of Psalms, which is the songbook of the church, is filled with expressions of grief and sorrow. It's really hard to find a hymn that expresses grief and sorrow. Or, if you're not so much of a hymn person, turn on a Christian radio station sometime. You don't hear a whole lot of songs that are just a cry out to God. If they do, then it always ends on the big happy note. Like, oh, we start off with the sadness, but we got to end well. And I get it. I'm on it. I like movies like that. I don't like movies that end in sorrow. I don't like songs that end in sorrow. But it's a reality of human life. And I think we're missing something in that we don't deal with it. We don't deal with this issue of lament. And one of the reasons is I think maybe we struggle, and there are different reasons, is what I mentioned earlier was Easter. Sometimes we move it away and we think, oh, the resurrection has eliminated the need for lament. We don't need lament anymore because Jesus is raised. God raised Jesus. Jesus is the answer to every lament, right? Well, yes and no, because yes, God, power overcame evil and death, and so we think we don't need lament. Maybe we think it's just for those who don't have enough faith. Maybe not all of that together. But there's a temptation to try and move away from grief or lament. Yes, Jesus has defeated the power of death, but we still live in this in-between. And we're reminded of living in the in-between because we attend funerals. We have loved ones pass away. We see grief, we see sorrow, and not just in death, but in so many other different ways. So we're reminded that we live in this in-between. Our temptation is to rush ahead and to say, but the resurrection's coming, but God will wipe away every tear. And that's a wonderful picture we're given in the final book of the Bible, the book of Revelation, where it's this picture of like, and God will wipe away every tear, and there'll be no more pain, no more sorrow, no more death, no more mourning. But that's not yet. The now we live in is filled with lament. We're still waiting for that. We remind ourselves of that every Sunday when we pray together. We say together the Lord's Prayer. And we say what? Your kingdom come. Your will be done here on earth as it is in heaven. Which is in part a lament. It's a reminder that it's not here yet. The verse we read about God's mercy, it may move us away from lament. And maybe we think, well, I shouldn't grieve. I shouldn't lament. I should focus on God's hope. And we do that in a lot of different ways. We do it when we're at a funeral. We say, oh, they're in a better place now. And we try and move past lament, but we need to find ways to remain in that. And what I want to suggest is to remind ourselves that Christians can suffer like everyone else. Just because we have the hope of the resurrection, just because we know Jesus defeated death, just because we know that there will come that day when God will wipe away every tear, doesn't mean we can't lament. There's a story in the Gospel of John, one of the four books in our Bible that tell the story of Jesus. And in the Gospel of John, Jesus has some really good friends, these two sisters, Mary and Martha, and her brother Lazarus. And they spent a lot. Jesus, they lived in this town of Bethany just outside Jerusalem. And it seems like whenever Jesus went to Jerusalem, he went and hung out with Mary and Martha and Lazarus. And in the Gospel of John, it tells the story where someone comes and they say, the one you love is sick. And they don't even have to name him. They know, oh, he's talking about Lazarus. And Jesus goes, but by the time Jesus reaches there, Lazarus has already died and they've placed him in a tomb. I'm not going to retell the whole story, but there's a moment in that story where Jesus goes to the tomb and it simply says Jesus wept. Now we might think, well, it's because of the unbelief. No, I think what's going on is Jesus truly feels the pain, the sorrow of what it's like to lose a friend. Spoiler alert, Jesus is about to call Lazarus out of the tomb. Jesus knows that he's about to do that. He knows that Lazarus isn't going to stay dead. Yet what does he do? He weeps. There's still this sorrow there. There's still this pain that's going on. When Jesus is hanging on the cross, he uses one of those lament psalms from Psalm 22, where he calls, my God, why have you forsaken me? He's experiencing that feeling of sorrow. The rest of the psalm turns and we see the victory. But in the moment, he's feeling the anguish and the sorrow. I think he knows that God's going to raise him from the dead. But in the moment, he's experiencing the grief. And I think maybe the lesson for us is it's okay to express our grief. It's okay to express our sorrow. I like the way Jamie Grant puts it. This quote, he says, "For the Christian, neither hope in Christ nor certainty of ultimate divine resolution to our problems in any way denies the human need for lament. Lament is not based on the psalmist's lack of future hope." Hear that. When we lament, it doesn't mean we don't have hope. Lament is grounded in the psalmist's present experience of life with God in the world. So lament is focusing on what's going on in the present. Lament is intrinsic to humanity living in relationship with God in his good but fallen world. And then he goes on, he says this, "The knowledge that everything will be all right does not change the fact that in our humanity, we need to respond before God to those present realities that are not all right." The knowledge that everything will be all right does not change the fact that we need to respond before God to those present realities that are not all right. We know everything's going to be all right, but right now they're not, and it's okay to respond that way. And lament is the way we say something is not right, that there's something wrong now, that we're experiencing our pain and suffering. But it's not just a complaint. We can be really good at just complaining. It's not just spilling out our unhappiness, but it's done in the context of relationship with God. It's a cry out to God. It's desiring to find God who might seem absent in the times of grief. It's speaking the pain, but underlying it is the hope that in God's compassion, he will hear and act to save. And that's the difference. Lament isn't just saying, oh, life is miserable, things are going bad, all these things. It's expressed to God because we express it to God because we know that he might ultimately save. But at the same time, it's simply pouring out those feelings and saying, God, this is what I'm feeling right now. And I think one of the things we're reminded of with books like Lamentation, God, in his providence, through the work of his Spirit, caused this book to be part of our Bible. And so I think by doing that, he's telling us something. He's saying, these kinds of expressions are okay. That we need to be able to do this. We need to be able to express those feelings. We need to have our honest questions and struggles with God. And recognize that they're not signs of unbelief. To lament is not a sign that you don't believe. In fact, it's a sign of faith. It's a sign of faith to cry out to God because you know God hears and answers. Lament doesn't break our relationship with God, but it takes place within that relationship. When we ask, why are things so wrong? We're affirming that God's plan is a world in which there are no more wrongs and tears. When we cry out to God saying, God, this world is broken, I'm experiencing this pain, we're acknowledging that God's plan is not that way, and we're keeping that relation. When we wonder, how long, oh God? It's affirming that we're waiting, and all things will be righted. In lament, we cry out in the midst of our faith and struggle in some ways as we deal with the suffering. So I want to mention just some thoughts on what does it look like to lament? I mean, you might write a poem, but there are some other things we do. One of the things we can do to lament is simply be in silence. Lamentations 2:10 talks about the people sitting in silence. And sometimes lament is simply that. It's just to be silent. Lamentations or lament can also be weeping. The first verses of Lamentations 1:2. She sobs through the night, tears stream down her cheeks. It's a picture of the city, but it's saying weeping is a part of lament. And there's this temptation of saying, oh, you don't need to cry. No, it's saying it's okay to weep. What we need to do is articulate the suffering, to name the pain, to not deny it or compare it or trivialize it. And there can be that temptation in our world to kind of compare and trivialize. And one of the ways that's done, and Diane Langberg, who's written a lot on grief and suffering and stuff, says this. She says, it is never helpful to remind one grieving of what they have not lost or of the fact that it could have been worse. And we do that to ourselves sometimes too, don't we? Where we experience a loss and we say, oh, but I'm not as bad off as that person. And what Langberg goes on to say is, she says this, we do not grieve what we have, but what we do not have. We compare our loss to the good we had, not to the bad that never happened. So when we're experiencing grief, I would invite us to avoid the temptation to say, well, it could have been worse, or these people have it worse. The fact is, you have lost something. There is some pain. There is some sorrow going on. And so express that. The empty space is that. It's empty. And so we compare our loss to the good we had, not to the bad that never happened. We say, oh, it could have been worse. Yeah, it could have been worse, but the reality is it's still bad. And it's okay to acknowledge that. And in lament, we also need community. And that's in part the value of the church. We need comforters. And Lamentations talks about the struggles of not having them. There's a part where Jeremiah talks about, like, oh, but I have no one to talk to. And so in lament, we need our comforters. And so this is what it says in Lamentations 1:21. He says, others heard my groans, but no one turned to comfort me. What's it like when you're lamenting, when you're grieving, and no one is there? And so the idea of lament is we need community. When my enemies heard about my troubles, they were happy to see what you had done. Oh, bring the day you promised when they will suffer as I have suffered. But that first line, others heard my groan, but no one turned to comfort me, which is why Paul says in the book of the Romans, be happy with those who are happy and weep with those who weep. To be comforters to one another, we need community. And this is related to lament, but I think it's important to say is, there are things that are, when you are the comforter, when someone is going through lament, there is a temptation sometimes to rush past it, to put it down, to find different ways to say it. And so there are things that are some, I'm going to highlight some things that are not helpful to say. When I was at our pastor's midwinter conference back in January in Chicago, a woman named Lisa Orris presented. She has a ministry she does where for people experiencing grief. And she had lost her son tragically. And so what she has done is worked with other people. And over time, she's accumulated and worked with people and talked with people. And even within the workshop there, people responded like, these things that people often say in the midst of grief that are simply not helpful. And some of those I've said, did people really say that sort of thing? And there were a bunch of people around the room that nodded their heads and said, oh yeah, I've heard this. So I'm going to read some of those. If you want, I didn't put them all up on the screen, but I've got a card here. And if you want, I can make copies for you. But of things to not say. First one is, she says, one of them is, at least you can have another child, you have other children, you can get married again. And you think, do people really say that? And I looked around and people said, yeah, I've heard that said. Or this one, be brave. And she says, when you're underwater, drowning, and cannot breathe, it is not the time to be brave. Don't say you can get through this. In the early stages of grief, most do not believe they can. Instead, say, I know you are hurting. I'm here with you. This one I like. Do not say, let me know if you need anything. And what she says is this, grieving people have no idea what they need. Just show up and do something. This one, don't say you seem like you are doing better. Grieving people often manage their grief so that it appears as if they are okay. Assume they are not. Instead, ask, how are you holding up today? Or this one, don't say everything happens for a reason. No, it doesn't. Sometimes senseless, awful, terrible things happen in life and there is no reasonable answer for it. Don't say, I know how you feel. Even when we've experienced the same sort of pain, we don't truly know what someone else feels. Another one, don't say, don't let grief color your whole life. This isn't helpful or encouraging. Or this one, don't say you will be stronger because of this. Grieving people do not want to build strength or endurance through the loss of someone they loved. What they want is their loved one back. So lament requires community, but to encourage lament, because what as I read those, and one of the reasons I read those is those can often shut down the grief. They can shut down the lament. When someone's grieving and we come up and we say something like that, a person can feel unsafe expressing their grief. They can feel unsafe expressing the lament. They don't want to do it, and it's healthy to do it. So we need to find ways to be able to encourage it and be there for people. And so we do that, but we also need our prayers. Be willing to say prayers of protest and petition. And when we do that, lament is more than the voicing of suffering. Nicholas Walterstorff, a writer, he's got a wonderful little book called Lament for a Son. He lost his son in a climbing accident. And Lament for a Son is simply like a diary of his thoughts as he's going through this process of grief. And one of the things he says is lament is more than the voicing of suffering. The mere voicing of suffering is complaint, not lament. Lament is a cry to God. As I was preparing for this sermon, I was looking back through Walterstorff's book. I was just tempted to read the whole thing to you, but I thought, well, you probably want some of my thoughts too. But it's a great book where he goes through this process, and you can see his struggles. He's a philosopher. He's a theologian. As he struggles with this, and he thinks, how do I express my grief? What do I deal with it? And he talks about the unhelpful things people say and what to do with that. But it's a wonderful picture of like grief and lament are this long and involved process. But we cry out and we voice our suffering, but we voice it to God. And lament is a cry for deliverance. About the suffering and the threat of meaninglessness. We're honest about our sin, our pain, and our anger. We're confused, but we're looking to God. We realize that there is some pain inside us that is too deep for human healing. Some evils are so deep that the only hope for ultimate defeat is in the goodness of God. And so that's part of what lament is. It's recognizing there is a pain, there is a sorrow inside of us, and we're acknowledging it, and we're acknowledging it to God because we know God is the only one who can bring healing. In the midst of it, we remember God's love for us, and that's the Lamentations 3. In the midst of sorrow, we recall God's loving kindness and his tender mercy. And recalling that is crucial to empowering us. The story of the cross and the resurrection will be at the heart of recollections of God's hesed of his goodness and mercy. But we don't want to rush there. And so that's the struggle of finding the balance. That's why I can't give you a formula for how that works. We lament, we grieve, we keep our eye on the cross, but we also are in the moment here. And we're not rushing to the resurrection, but we also have to keep our eye on that there is a resurrection. And it's finding ways to do that. So my invitation is to bring lament into your life. And that might sound a strange thing to do, but even without having a conversation individually with every one of you, I feel fairly safe in saying that every one of us has grief in our life of some shape or form. And the book of Lamentations, the book of Psalms, God is his invitation to say, express it. It's there already. So don't be afraid to be honest. Don't be afraid to be able to relate to God in times of trouble. To come to God and say, God, I don't know what's going on. God, I feel this deep sorrow. God, I'm drowning. God, I'm in pain. God, I'm in suffering. And God, help me. It may not come out in acrostic poetry or beautiful lyrics. Sometimes it's just sobs. Sometimes it's just cries. Sometimes it's just that oh, God, I don't know what to do. But we cry out to God because God wants us to cry out. And we cry out to a God who knows and understands our suffering. Remember the story I told earlier. Jesus was on a cross and he was crying out to God because he understands suffering. He had friends abandon him. He was betrayed by friends. He was convicted wrongly. He experienced suffering in his life. And so we cry out and he understands that. But we also remember God as a God of hope and life. And that's what lament is. Lament isn't denying that. Lament isn't saying God isn't good. In fact, lament is acknowledging that God is good, and that's why we're crying out to him, because we know that he is a God who cares and a God who will one day bring restoration. So what I'm inviting us to do is find ways. We already have the grief. So what do we do with it? We give it to God. But it's not what I want to remind us of. It's not a simple formula. You're not going to sit down tomorrow, cry out, lament to God, and then by Tuesday feel better about it. That's not how lament works. That's not how grief works. But it's a part of that process. It's giving it, and it's beginning to carry the weight and letting God do that for us. We've all experienced grief. We will all experience more grief and sorrow in this world. And so God's invitation to us is to cry out, to bring that to him. To pour out our feelings, to be honest with the pain, the sorrow that's going on, to not deny it, but to give it to him. God's invitation is for us is to be a community that grieves with those who grieve. To be a place where we can honestly say to one another, we're grieving, and know that the person that we talk to will listen, will offer a hug. And that may be the one other thing when I talked about avoiding the statements. One of the simplest ways to avoid all these bad statements, don't say anything. Because sometimes in the midst of grief, we just need to be there. And that's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable because we want to say something. We want to remind people. We want to give them hope. But sometimes all we simply need to do is to be there. And so my prayer is that we become a community where grief and lament are a normal part of what we do. Where we can express it, we can say it, and it's a part of our rhythm as individuals and as a community. Where we cry out to God. But we also are a community that hangs on to hope. We are the community that reminds ourselves in the midst of that. Where we say, I will never forget this awful time as I grieve over my loss. Yet I still dare to hope when I remember this. So may we be a community that dares to hope. The faithful love of the Lord never ends. His mercies never cease. Great is his faithfulness. His mercies begin afresh each morning. I say to myself, the Lord is my inheritance. Therefore, I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who depend on him, to those who search for him. So it is good to wait quietly for salvation from the Lord. And so we wait. We wait for God, knowing that his salvation has come in Jesus, that his mercies are new every morning. And so we come to him who is our hope and our only hope. Amen.